From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Mixed signals coming out of Washington over a course to be followed in relations with Russia and China. We begin with this report from Jack Parrick of an announcement made by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who was attending a meeting of NATO foreign ministers in Brussels Tuesday, from China's global television network, CGTN.
The U.S. says it will no longer put up with Russian claims that Moscow hasn't developed a new intermediate-range missile system banned under the terms of a 1987 nuclear pact between the nations.
The United States today declares it has found Russia in material breach of the treaty and will suspend our obligations as a remedy effective in 60 days unless Russia returns to full and verifiable compliance.
It's a move set to intensify tensions between Russia and the United States.
NATO alliance members agree that Russia frequently violates the 30-year-old Cold War pact between Washington and Moscow to completely remove intermediate-range nuclear missiles from their arsenals.
They say it's now down to Russia to save the deal by proving it's not in breach. NATO ministers also discussed the confrontations in the Azov Sea more than a week ago. Russia is still holding 24 Ukrainian soldiers captive after a military clash between navies. Ukrainian and Georgian ministers were welcomed to NATO HQ during this meeting as a show of support for the former Soviet states, a move which won't be appreciated in Moscow. NATO ships have spent 120 days patrolling the Black Sea this year, but Ukraine is asking for more, what it's calling a comprehensive answer to Russian aggression. And there are some here in Europe calling for action.
Either NATO or individual member states could give Ukraine more equipment to be able to defend itself. I mean, high-level equipment, for example, anti-ship missiles, could be put on the land. This would send a strong signal to the Russians.
Russia accuses Ukraine of provocation for the clashes in the Azov Sea, saying the shots it fired at Ukrainian ships were a retaliation. All eyes are now on Russia's reaction to the US threat to pull out of the INF treaty, which many fear could be the beginning of a global arms race. Jack Parrick, CGTN, Brussels.
That followed a tweet from President Trump on Monday, which said in part, quote, "I am certain that at some time in the future, President Xi and I, together with President Putin of Russia, will start talking about a meaningful halt to what has become a major and uncontrollable arms race." NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg gave a press conference at the beginning of a two-day session in Brussels on Tuesday, following a meeting with the former Soviet republics of Georgia and Ukraine. We bring you those remarks in their entirety.
Good afternoon. NATO foreign ministers have just met with the foreign ministers of Ukraine and Georgia. We addressed the security situation in the Black Sea region, including Russia's violations of Georgia's and Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Four years ago, Russia illegally annexed Crimea. Now Russia is attempting to use Crimea to expand its influence and control the Sea of Azov. Just a few days ago, we saw Russia use military force against Ukrainian ships and naval personnel. We call on Russia to immediately release the Ukrainian sailors and ships it seized. Russia must allow freedom of navigation and allow unhindered access to Ukrainian ports. Russia's pattern of disrespect for the borders of its neighbors includes military presence in Abkhazia and South Ossetia. Russia must end its recognition of both regions and withdraw its forces from these regions of Georgia. In response to Russia's aggressive actions, NATO has substantially increased its presence in the Black Sea region over the past few years, at sea, in the air, and on ground. NATO ships routinely patrol and exercise in the Black Sea. This year, ships under NATO command have spent 120 days in the Black Sea, compared to 80 days the year before. Several allies conduct NATO air policing in the region. Allies also conduct regular reconnaissance flights. And we have set up a Romanian-led multinational brigade in Romania. Three NATO members, Bulgaria, Romania and Turkey, are littoral states. So there is already a lot of NATO in the Black Sea. And we will continue to assess our presence in the region. At our meeting today, we agreed to continue working together to prepare Georgia for NATO membership. We recognize the significant progress Georgia has made with reforms, and we thanked Georgia for its major contributions to our mission in Afghanistan. We also restated NATO's solidarity with Ukraine. We recognize Ukraine's aspirations to join the alliance, and progress has already been made on reforms. But challenges remain, so we encourage Ukraine to continue on its path of reform. This is crucial for prosperity and peace in Ukraine. Allies greatly value our unique partnerships with Georgia and Ukraine. In different ways, each of them contributes to our shared security, and NATO remains committed to strengthening our ties with both countries. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
We'll go to the BBC over there.
Yes, thank you very much, Jonathan Marcus, Secretary General from the BBC. You've talked about NATO expanding its activities in the Black Sea region over the last few years, but clearly that has been insufficient to change Russia's behaviour in the light of the most recent events in the Sea of Azov. Have you tasked NATO military authorities to look at other steps to increase NATO military activity in the Black Sea, or are there other steps that individual NATO countries might take to provide greater assistance to Ukraine?
So NATO's presence in the Black Sea makes a difference, and we have significantly increased our presence there. And during the meeting today, allies clearly sent a message that they will continue to provide practical support to Ukraine, political support to Ukraine, but also continue to have a presence in the Black Sea region. Both within the NATO framework, but also some NATO allies have presence bilaterally. We support the Ukrainian armed forces in different ways, with command and control, with cyber. Some allies also provide training in different areas. NATO helped them with to strengthen their naval capabilities. We helped them at the Naval Academy in Odessa. We also helped them to develop maritime capabilities, training exercises, and also port visits. And we will, of course, very closely monitor and watch the situation in the Black Sea region after the incidents we saw a few days ago. I think also we have to remember and understand that one of the reasons why NATO now is in the progress in the process of implementing the biggest reinforcement of collective defense since the end of the Cold War is actually Russia's aggression against Ukraine. We have battle groups in the eastern part of the alliance for the first time in our history. We have the Romanian-led multinational brigade in Romania. We have air policing in the Black Sea. And we have more naval presence. So all of this sends a very clear message from NATO and NATO allies to Russia.
We'll go to Ukrainian TV in the first row.
Good evening. My name is Christina, TV Channel 5 Ukraine. So my question is, what will be the next steps of NATO in the case of further blockade of the Azov Sea by Russia, if it will continue, for example? Because as we all understand, it is quite dangerous to this threat, not just for Ukraine, for Turkey, but for other European countries which suffer from this blockade and all the ships and vessels. Thank you.
So this meeting in itself was an important message, or sent an important message to Russia, because having all NATO allies, and some of them also have presence on the bilateral level in the Black Sea, and we have three littoral states. All NATO allies met with Ukraine and Georgia and sent a very clear message about our support. We are present in Georgia, we are present in Ukraine, and they committed to continue and to deepen the cooperation with both Georgia and Ukraine. We will, as I say, follow and monitor. We are following and monitoring closely the developments in the region, including, of course, in the Black Sea. And then we will, based on our assessments, continue to assess our presence in the region.
Itartas, second row, centre.
Thank you very much, Denis Dubrovin, TASS News Agency. Mr. Secretary General, 4 years ago, your predecessor, Mr. Anders Fogh Rasmussen, has called for restraint in suppressing the Maidan protesters in Kyiv. Would you call now for restraint for the French forces of police forces to when they're suppressing the riots of Gilets Jaunes? Merci.
First of all, I think that's no meaning in comparing those two situations. And I also think that to try in any way to compare that is totally wrong. Then the important thing for NATO is that we support the territorial integrity of Ukraine. And we will never and accept and recognize the illegal annexation of Crimea and that Russia continues to destabilize eastern Ukraine. And we have to understand what happened near the Sea of Azov in this context. Because first Russia annexed Crimea, then they built a bridge, and then they used the annexation of Crimea and the illegally built bridge to try to take control over the Sea of Azov. So therefore, we continue to call on Russia to release the ships, release the naval personnel, but also allow Ukraine access to the Sea of Azov with both commercial ships and military ships. Because that's actually an agreement between Russia and Ukraine, and Russia has to honor that agreement. To impede access for Ukrainian ships into the Sea of Azov will be something which is absolutely in violation of the agreement between the two countries, and it's a new example of how Russia is not respecting the territorial integrity of its neighbors. So this is what this case is about.
Very last question, Rustavi II, lady in second row.
Georgian TV company, Rustavi II. Secretary General, does the Ukrainian side raise some new initiations about this situation? And second, Hungarian Foreign Affairs Minister, he made a statement that he will raise issue about the membership action plan to Georgia. Do you discuss on this meeting this issue and which kind of position has other allies? Thank you.
So this was one of the topics we addressed in the meeting. I think I will leave it to each individual ally to refer what they actually said in the specific meeting. But in general, I can say that we strongly support Georgia on its path towards NATO membership. And NATO's heads of state and government, they stated as late as in July that Georgia will become a member of the alliance. We continue to provide support to Georgia to implement the necessary reforms. We commend the progress Georgia has made, and we continue to work with Georgia in modernizing their armed forces, building strong institutions, and we have the Training and Evaluation Center in Georgia, which we use to work with Georgia. That is important for Georgia, but it's also important for NATO, because it strengthens the interoperability of our forces. And many allies expressed in the meeting today that they are extremely grateful for the strong contribution of Georgia to different NATO missions and operations. So I think this meeting was a strong message of solidarity between NATO and Georgia and NATO and Ukraine, and that we stand together.
Thank you very much. This concludes this press point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Following that press conference, Stoltenberg joined the foreign ministers of NATO members to discuss a lengthy agenda of issues. When they emerged late Tuesday, he made this announcement.
All allies have concluded that Russia has developed and fielded a new ground-launched cruise missile system, the SSC-8, also known as the 9M729. Allies agree that this missile system violates the INF Treaty and poses significant risks to Euro-Atlantic security. And they agree that Russia is therefore in material breach of its obligations under the INF Treaty. The treaty has been a pillar of Euro-Atlantic security for more than 30 years. It eliminated an entire category of weapons and made us all safer. For over 5 years, the United States has made every effort to engage with Russia and to seek answers about the new missile. The US has raised the matter formally with Russia at senior levels more than 30 times. Other allies have raised it with Russia too. We did so a few weeks ago in the NATO-Russia Council here in Brussels. But Russia has continued to produce and deploy the new missile. Russia's violation of the INF Treaty erodes the foundations of effective arms control and undermines Allied security. This is part of Russia's broader pattern of behavior, intended to weaken the overall Euro-Atlantic security architecture. There is no question that the United States fully comply with the treaty. There are no new US missiles in Europe, but there are new Russian missiles in Europe. Arms control agreements are only effective if they are respected by all sides. A situation where the US abides by the treaty and Russia does not is simply not sustainable. We call on Russia to return urgently to full and verifiable compliance with the INF Treaty. It is now up to Russia to preserve the INF Treaty. NATO allies remain firmly committed to preserving strategic stability and Euro-Atlantic unity. NATO will continue to ensure the credibility and the effectiveness of the alliance's overall deterrence and defense posture. We will continue to consult regularly, and we will continue to keep Russia's military posture and deployments under close review. At the same time, all allies are firmly committed to supporting and strengthening real and verifiable arms control. NATO exists to prevent conflict and preserve peace. And we seek dialogue, not confrontation, with Russia. We don't want a new arms race. We don't want a new Cold War. So allies will continue to work for a better relationship with Russia. We will continue to engage, including through the meetings of the NATO-Russia Council. So Russia now has a last chance to come back into compliance with the INF Treaty, but we must also start to prepare for a world without the treaty. And then I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, Wall Street Journal.
Dan Michaels, Wall Street Journal. In the discussions today, was there any dissent? Was there anyone saying that the U.S. was moving too quickly to announce it was leaving officially the INF? Thank you.
All allies agreed, and we have reflected that agreement in the statement. And the statement is very clear, very strong, and it states clearly that Russia is in violation and Russia is in material breach
of its obligations under the INF Treaty. We also say that Russia, it's up to Russia now to preserve the INF Treaty. They have a last chance to show and demonstrate in a verifiable way that they comply with the treaty. But we also have to prepare for a world without the treaty. And that's exactly what we now do. We state that Russia is violating the treaty. We call on them to come back into full compliance with the treaty. But we also start to prepare for the fact that this treaty may break down because Russia, after years of engagement from our side with them, they still don't provide any credible answers to all our questions.
Okay, NPR.
Hi, Terry Schultz with NPR and Deutsche Welle. NATO has known for quite a while that this was the U.S. intention. So when you say now that you will start to prepare for a world without this arms control treaty, what does that mean? What are some of the ideas that you're looking at? And also, when you were asked about dissent, we know that not all countries would choose this as the step for the U.S. to take today. So, I mean, simply repeating that they all agreed on this statement doesn't mean that there aren't allies who believe differently.
I think the way we have handled this issue demonstrates the strength of NATO. We are 29 allies. There are sometimes discussions. There are sometimes need for to sit down and meet and discuss. But at the end, we're able to agree. And this statement is a strong demonstration of the unity and the strength of the alliance, because it sends a very clear message about who is responsible for the violations and the fact that the INF Treaty is now really in jeopardy. And it also sends a message to Russia about that they have a last chance to come back into compliance. So I really believe that this shows how important it is that we have done exactly what we have done, that we have consulted, that there has been briefings, that we have shared intelligence, and then that we have been able to agree on the common position on the way forward. And this is very important, and this is really serious, because, of course, all missiles are dangerous. But these missiles are in particular dangerous because they are hard to detect, they are mobile, they are nuclear capable, they will reduce the warning time, they can reach European cities, and therefore they also reduce the threshold for a potential use of nuclear weapons in the conflict. That's the reason why the INF Treaty has been so important, and that's the reason why it is so serious that this treaty now risks breaking totally down because of the Russian violations. The last thing I would say is that we are constantly assessing the military posture of Russia. We have strengthened our collective defense, and we will then, of course, also assess the consequences of the deployment of the new Russian missiles.
Okay, Financial Times over there.
Thank you. Michael Peel, Financial Times. Was there much discussion of potential next steps if Russia doesn't come into compliance, and are there concerns, particularly among European allies, of the prospect now of fresh US missile deployments in Europe, possibly contributing to exactly the kind of arms race you want to avoid?
The important message from this meeting is that we will continue to discuss and address this issue within the NATO framework. We will collectively develop a set of responses. We will do that in a measured, considered way because this is very serious and we need to analyze the consequences of each and every step. That's exactly why we need to do this as an alliance, all 29 allies together. The INF Treaty, the US is part of party to the INF Treaty, all the NATO allies are not. But of course, the consequences of a breakdown of the INF Treaty will be there for all allies. This affects the security of all allies.
And therefore, I welcome the fact that the United States has consulted over months and long time with NATO allies. This was an important issue at the previous defense ministerial meeting in October. It was an issue addressed at the summit in July, and it has been an issue which has been discussed within NATO for some time. So it's too early to conclude now, but the important message is that we will do this as an alliance. We will have a collectively developed response.
Washington Post, up there.
Thank you. Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. Mr. Secretary General, you've spoken repeatedly over the years about how the missile deployments of the 1970s and 1980s shaped your perspective as a person and as a politician. I wanted to ask what you feel it means for your legacy as a NATO Secretary General to preside over an era that likely does see the end of the INF Treaty. Thank you.
I regret that we now most likely will see the end of the INF Treaty. But at the same time, we don't have any other alternative than to react in the way we do. Because we have to remember that no arms control agreement will work if it's only respected by one party. And the problem with the INF Treaty is that the United States is in compliance while Russia is violating the treaty. And that's not only a problem for the INF treaty, but that's a problem for all other arms control treaties. Because if we accept violation of one treaty, then we also undermine the credibility of all the other arms control treaties. So this is part about trying to defend the INF treaty, but also about trying to defend the whole idea of verifiable arms control. You are right. For me, the issue of intermediate range nuclear weapons shaped my understanding back in the 70s and the 80s about security and defense issues. I think it shaped a whole generation of young politicians, especially in Europe. We were very concerned about the deployment of SS-20s, intermediate range Soviet Union missiles, but also concerned about the NATO response, the Pershing and cruise missiles. Therefore, we all really welcomed, and we really felt that the world was moving forward when the Soviet Union and the United States in 1987 agreed on the INF Treaty. And this was the first treaty that didn't only put a ceiling on the number of weapons or reduce the number of weapons, but actually banned all weapons, abolished the whole category of weapons. So therefore, this was really arms control at its best. And therefore, it is really a big setback if this treaty now breaks totally down. So we will reach out to Russia in many different ways. Just the fact that we now have this united NATO position sends a clear message to Russia. Second, NATO allies meet with Russia bilaterally in different formats with the heads of state, government, foreign ministers, and so on, and they raise this issue with their Russian counterparts. And they will also do so in the following days and weeks. And we are also ready to raise this issue again in the NATO-Russia Council. We did so just a few weeks ago. So Russia know our position, they know our concern, and in the beginning, they denied the existence of this system. Then actually, they were not able to deny the existence of the system, but then suddenly they changed their explanation and said, yes, the system exists, but it doesn't violate the INF treaty. But we are ready, of course, and to talk to Russia. We did that in the NATO-Russia Council. We are ready to do it again. But I think this is actually not so much a question of how many meetings we will have with Russia, because they very well know our position. This is about whether Russia wants to preserve the INF Treaty. If they so want, they can comply with the treaty. If not, then this treaty will not survive.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.